Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Simcast. I'm Matt Hunter. I remembered who I am, and more importantly, I remembered what the show is called. Ben's updated the date. Oh, unbelievable. Episode 35 on September the 14th in the year of our Emperor M2-23. You have to check that. Yes?
Yep, that is correct.
Awesome. Alongside me is my Imperial stalwart and 40k guru, Mr. Steve Wilkinson. Hello.
Hello. How are we?
No, we haven't lost our senses. We're just Warhammer nerds, I think it's safe to say, isn't it?
Yep. We're going to import more and more.
One day there will be a show which will be partly sim racing but three quarters 40k chatter.
Yes. Once they make a game of Gork and Walker or something like that, then we can actually put it on the show.
They did do. I'm sure. Oh no, they have got a race. They've got a racing one coming out.
I don't know about this.
Based on the. What was it called? I've got the bloody box. The one with all the orc.
Like Formula War. Genuinely, it's like that.
Formula War, very good. I like it. Yeah, basically all the orc buggies, all the orc buggies and bikes and stuff like that in it. Ferrari are on the right track because, as anyone who knows about orc transportation, red ones go faster.
They do, and they also fall apart every time they try and do something rational.
It's true. Basically, what we're saying is the orcs probably have better strategists than Ferrari. Very strange digression. More so than normal. In fact, there's bits of bobs going on in the last week. I'm slightly envious of the guys last week basically being able to wax lyrical about how awesome iRacing, the recent iRacing release was. And let's face it, it was pretty impressive. There was quite a bit of stuff out there, wasn't there, Steve?
There was quite a bit. I mostly kept it up with it on the social medias and things like that, as I was massively busy at work and away over the weekend and things. So,
yes. So now, of course, we're not going to talk about it because we can't not. So iRacing's got all four of the GTP current entries in it. Which one is your favourite, dare I ask?
Well, it has to be the Porsche,
obviously.
Is it the most nicest looking though? Because I'm a Porsche fan, I have to say yes. But aesthetically, I think the Acura might get it for me.
Fair. I see. The funny thing is, for me, the Porsche, but in the Hertz Team Jota livery, is so reminiscent of, like, when you see it from certain angles, it looks exactly like a Group C car.
Yes. Especially the C2s as well, which are a little bit smaller and a little bit more like rounded, if that makes sense.
But it's such a good look. That livery in particular is, I'm all over that. We can't talk about the NSFW that is the Ferrari 499P.
I'd love to see the Porsche in an old Faubermeyer Proton colours. Do you know, like, from the GT2 days?
The couple of shades of blue?
Yeah.
Older than that.
Would it be 2009-ish?
As in when it literally had Felbermayr written down the side of it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would look amazing. So if someone can make that as a design...
I would go slightly different. And I'd say... Oh, God, was it White Lightning? No.
Yes, White Lightning.
It was, yeah. So you know the one I mean. That livery, I don't know how well it would necessarily look on the 963, but that was always a cool... See, Rexy AO Racing, or AO Motorsport, you know, they think Rexy putting a gigantic mouth on the front of it was a new thing. That's been done before.
Yeah, it has. White Lightning, that was with... Who was driving that? Years ago, I can't remember now. Lucas Lure drove that car, I think.
Did he? I think,
if I remember correctly, Lucas Lure drove that car when it was in Porsche 996, I think.
Mm.
I think that is, because my dad had a Scalectric car of it.
I know it was a Peterson car. I bet you Patrick Long raced it.
I'd imagine so, unless he was in the Flying Lizard car at the time.
Mm.
One livery that would look really good on a 96 GTP is the old Haribo Racing livery. I have to say that. That would be amazing as well. I think that would be brilliant.
Well, if you came down that line, I reckon Grello would look pretty awesome myself. This is the hot take. I never used to like the Grello livery. I thought it was a bit meh. But actually, as time's gone on, and they've sort of refined it
a bit, yeah.
With the aero arrows and stuff like that on it, it's kind of just, yeah, it's grown on me quite a bit.
Mm, I agree on that.
It's a good... It's good, especially the new... So, I think I saw... I can't remember if Spark's got one out, but I know IXO have got the 2022 car available. And it's a damn good-looking model. But with a lot of my recent Audi purchases and DTM purchases, I'm running out of space. So I need to just hold off on that a little bit, I think.
Just get another shelf. Just get a shelf above in the kitchen. One of the cupboard doors off.
Right. Okay, I live in a 200-year-old cottage that has no square walls. Shelving is not what we do here. I am not replete with floor space with which to put extra stuff on the floor either. So yeah, no, sadly. We need to talk about your weekend, sir, and your good wood.
Yes, I had the most wonderful weekend ever. Mm.
Well, was it dry?
It was 30-something degrees on the Saturday.
So, yes, it was dry.
Oh, my word. Was it warm? It was a mightily long day.
I haven't actually said where you were, dear listener. He was at the Goodwood Revival.
Yes, I was having so much fun at Goodwood. First time, yep. Mm. Went with... Ellie, my lovely girlfriend, and she's really into all like 1950s pinup and all that jazz and things like that. So she was having a whale of a time dressed up, and I was merely trying to compliment the level.
You did the flat cap. You fitted the bill. As I believe I called you on chat back, Steve the Farmer.
Farmer
Steve.
I was actually drinking cider as well that day as well. So yeah, I really was. Goodwood was amazing. If anyone thinks that they might not enjoy it, just go. Just for one day, just go. It's amazing. Because I went just we went just a Saturday. I'm fairly certain we didn't see everything. I think I only saw probably three races out the whole day, and we were just walking up for three. Yeah, there's so much to see. I saw Karun Chanduk and him making a Ferrari secondhand. That's one I saw. Mm-hmm. Saw the 1960s Formula One cars going around. That was very cool to see. And some other stuff as well. But as I say, there's so much to see and do. So from like World War II reenactment guys driving around on the old airfield strip and everything in all their Jeeps and trucks.
Nice.
The abundance of Spitfires and Hurricanes. I'd never seen so many in a collective place before. I think they had 8 there, which was amazing. And yeah, if you're into bikes, you're into GT cars, you're into Formula cars, you're into just production cars, you're into just dressing up for 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s attire. Just go. It's amazing. Everyone is super friendly. And yeah, so Ellie had like people come up to her and just be like, "Oh, I'm from like such and such vintage group," and I think, "Oh, can we take your photo?" And this, that, and the other, and she's just absolutely loving it. So yeah, and then they even had a 1950s fun fair as well.
Awesome.
So over the road, literally called Goodwood Over the Road, all of the rides were powered by Showman engines, like steam engines, which was absolutely amazing as well. I'd never seen so many of them in this collective place as well. I think I had 4 or 5, which was wonderful. And yeah, so
I don't know if they still do the Dorset Steam Fair, but that was always a bit like that.
I think they do.
I
have seen that advertised somewhere.
It was something my granddad and I were always going to go to, but obviously not something we can do now. But yeah, that's always had those kind of things there. It always seemed. I used to get them in Exmouth Seafront as well, randomly. Bundling through the town, making my flat shake.
What cars did I see that ticked off the bucket list?
One thing I will say, did you get to watch the bike, any of the bike racing?
I didn't see as in physically standing on the spectator bank and actually watching it, but I was walking around and I was seeing them go round, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Those bikes move around a lot. You take it for granted, and especially like modern cars sort of things, like you take for granted things that you take for granted, like aerodynamics and just general vehicle handling. Bikes move around a lot when they go into braking, especially when they're like from the 60s and
I'm 50s running on tight, very thin tires.
Exactly.
I think they were 500s as well. I might not be totally wrong. I'm sure I heard them say that. But you know, you see some of the names. I don't know if this will mean anything, but seeing some of the names that were out there, like Steve Plater and Mike Rutter, for an example. I'm just picking all the Midlanders. For some reason, Mike Rutter's a family name, a name in our motorbike televisual entertainment since as long as I can remember.
I think Jason Momoa was also doing some of the parade laps as well on the Sunday.
Was he?
Apparently, yeah.
What was kind of bittersweet was it was also so Steve Parrish who used to race and then did a lot of TV coverage. He's been. Obviously, he stopped doing TV coverage, I think, but he was carrying on doing sort of like the classic riding and whatnot. Officially retired on Sunday, and that was his last ever race. And he was racing with Freddie Sheen, which is Barry Sheen's son, which was quite cool on the number 7.
That's quite fitting, quite nice.
Yeah, so that was really nice. But the question is, and I'm going to throw this out to the listeners as well, because I haven't got a clue. You know how like they have like the Super Tourers now in classic racing, which makes me shudder. So it's possible. Yeah. So it is possible to race things, you know, and like you've got the classic endurance racing as well, which has things like the Peugeot 908 and whatnot, which is even more shuddering.
That's really scary. That's now a classic.
It is. it kind of is. And yet. for bikes, I've never seen anything from sort of like the late 90s, early noughties race, like in a like a air quotes classic race or vintage race. You got to think they must be around.
There must be, I can't think of anything actually.
Yeah, because I would love to see the Hodgson, Ducati, and Chris Walker Suzuki battle from like 2000 or 2001. John Reynolds Suzukis and Aaron Slight and Colin Edwards' SP1 Hondas and things like that. All racing out on track together. It'd be so cool.
Those bikes used to absolutely scream.
Oh, they're nuts. Absolutely. Norihaga's Yamaha R7 was the first like superbike I really fell in love with before I even saw it. And I kind of like Hondas anyway, because I've always liked Honda. Honda is just in my head and always has been. But I remember watching Norihaga. I can't remember if it was... I know it was 2000, and I think it was the Brands Hatch race, and I was just watching him, like, just focused on this bike. I was thinking, that bike is absolutely bloody awesome. And that was it. I was a Norihaga fan. until I went, oh, actually, no, the SP2 Hondas, the Castrol Hondas, which were being developed out of Lincolnshire at the time. And, of course, you saw the kind of... Yeah, yeah. Right. I'm gonna say it was Louth. It was very near to Cabwell anyway.
That's not a million miles away from where I am.
No, yeah. And
just county.
Well, it's like Crescent Suzuki's Bournemouth, I think. You know, you see these big names and they're pretty sort of like local to where we used to be. And they're just such amazing bikes, and they captured in my imagination in like for two wheel racing the same way that Super Tourers did for four. And you just sort of think they've got to be around somewhere. They can't all be on static display somewhere, or I can't imagine Troy Bayliss owns every single one and never wants to ride them again. Yeah. But yeah, I just want to see Steve Plater going out on his BSB Kawasaki again. That would just be quite awesome. I'd say about Mike Rutter, but he's out in BSB anyway. Still,
yeah, he's still going. Still.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's still going. I don't think he's retired yet. I think the series will shut down before he retires. this is where someone replies on what are we calling it now?
X
Zitter X
X the Xverse
the Xverse
Xverse.
At Simcast Radio on that. I think it's also at Simcast Radio on Threads. Or in the Middle Week Motorsport Listeners Collective. Let us know your thoughts on classic racing and what you would like to see. And am I stupid? Are there no bikes left? Have they all gone? Have they all disappeared or been, chucked in a skip or whatever?
Yeah.
This is going to work really well on radio. You had a picture to show me?
Ah, yes, I did. Right. This is going to work really well. So, do you remember last time we were on air?
Yes.
We were talking about weird and wonderful things you found spectators standing on or doing things on the side of a track.
Yes.
I think I said this. I feel like that was a conversation we had.
Yes. With our magnificent guest, Rob Ladbrook.
Yes, it was.
If you haven't listened to that show, please do go back, listen to it, and listen to three fully grown adults wax lyrical about GT racing in a very, very childish way for an hour.
I feel like I have topped the chart of things.
I am going to preface this with there's a very good chance that the kings of turn 10, i.e. our good friend Lewis Satterley and all his friends who used to do Beer Town at Daytona and at Sebring, will no doubt be able to top it somehow. But please do go ahead.
So, I don't take full credit for this. I was sent this by my friend
Lewis,
Mark.
When you listen to this show, please do respond, because it will be just marvellous.
I was sent this by my friend Mark from Ireland. So he always sends me really good funnies.
So it's from Mondello Park, then?
I don't think it is from Mondello Park, but what circuit do you think this was at? It's on Messenger.
Okay, I've got it. Okay, so for the listeners' benefit, what are we looking at here? Because that's okay.
So I think this was taken at something like Nürburgring or whatever, and it was a group of students, and they only wanted to pay for one camping plot where you get like 5 meters.
Just about to say, if this is a 5x7 meter camping plot, and they only wanted to pay for one, there's 40 of them.
Yep. So there's like 8 tents all racked up with scaffolding, and they now make a skyscraper. I think it's in Europe, because if you look at the green tent on level 1, 2, 3, 4 of this, it looks very European, that bike.
There's a bicycle on there.
There is a bicycle.
Went Dillis, and someone went to the trouble of carrying their bicycle up 4 flights of scaffolding to, I'm assuming, keep it safe.
Keep it off the ground. You never know when there'll be a flash flood.
Someone has got a Lilo on the ground floor, so I mean, yes, these things are distinctly possible.
I think these people need. There's one
a medal.
There's 4 barbecues in that picture as well, and a solar panel at the base of the
clean energy.
Yeah, clean energy. So I think this is taken at something like Nürburgring or something like that. So
what we'll have to share this on Twitter so that the listener can actually see what we're doing. But on the ground floor, so i.e. the level that is in fact covered by every other level above it, they've put a parasol up. They're already in the shade and they've put a parasol up.
So they have. I didn't even notice that.
That's just...
An electric fan. If you look above it, it's an electric fan.
I mean, the health and safety... The health and safety quality here really does sort of scream European racing venue to me personally, having experienced things at Spa in the past as well.
But I mean, I can imagine them.
Wow, over to you, Lewis, is all I can say, because I don't know that that's going to get topped. Now I know, obviously, Lewis is. I can never remember if it was stuff from his bit or from something adjacent actually interfered with the race by blowing onto the track. Can you imagine it? Oh yeah, no, I don't want to think about it.
Can you imagine what if that just like toppled and
went into the? It's just yeah. Anyway, that's
at least you can't lose it. Like if you're think of that. Like, in, do you remember at Le Mans in Beaujour campsite?
Yes.
Where I was. And imagine how massive that is. Imagine that, right? You can't lose it, can you? Because you put fairy lights on it, you do loads of stuff.
Oh, you're not going to lose it. You're definitely not going to lose it.
You've got more chance of it losing you. So
what bothers me now, as someone who has obviously worked with storing things at heights, what bothers me ever so slightly is that the biggest tent is on the 1, 2, 3, 4 fifth level, and what looks like the smallest tent is on the ground floor, which I can tell you now is definitely not the safest way of doing that.
Yeah, but they're protected because they have a parasol.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, so the parasol is a known for its deflective abilities when it comes to giant weights falling on you. It's well known. Wile E. Coyote wrote the book on it, I believe.
Exactly.
There's
a hammock. The thing is, though, the more you look at this, the more things you actually
It is actually
find.
True. It is actually. We are going to share this on at least Twitter so that you can see what we're talking about here, because it's very much worth it. But yes, the more you look, the more you see, and the more I see, the less I wish I had, because it's mildly terrifying.
It's interesting, isn't it? So thank you, Mark, for sending me this. Please send me more of these funnies, because this is it did make my morning.
Do you know how I know that's definitely not in Ireland?
How?
Sun's out.
Ah, that'll do it. That'll do it.
Yeah. Come on, of the things I could have said, that's really quite tame.
It's that massive blue thing behind it that isn't a tent.
Yeah. Mm. Goodness me. Yeah, so we will share that so that everyone can sort of go, what on earth is this? if you're listening on chat back on recorded on your favorite channels, be it iTunes or Spotify or Google Music or wherever you find this podcast, head over to one of our channels and we will share the photo. I look forward to Lewis's feedback on that, because I'm sure
it's got to be an actual picture as well. You can't just go, oh well, there was this in,
oh, he's gonna, yeah, we're not accepting 1998
Photoshop. You know,
incidentally dear listener, if you have seen anything more alarmingly health and safety averse than what we're discussing at the minute, please do send us the picture on our social media channels at Simcast Radio using the hashtag Simcast RSL, or the hashtag I can't believe it's not broken, and we will obviously retweet the best of them, because why not? I don't know if you remember, this is a Simcast, this is a sim racing podcast. We may have lost sight of that last one.
Yeah, it's I mean, we'll get around there eventually. You know.
We make no apologies for our deviation. I need to say something different than that starts with Dev. For our deviationary ways, because that's just more fun.
The thing is, if you look at the show as a whole, so every 2 weeks,
yes,
within the 2 hours, right, more than 50% is sim racing chat.
Oh. Yes.
So therefore, the majority is sim racing. Therefore, we're still a sim racing podcast.
Yes.
It's exactly all about. Yeah. It's all about when you take a step back and you look at the whole picture.
Basically, think of it like an episode of Good Top Gear, whereby just over 50% is car reviews and the stuff that most grey trousered people want to tune in for, and then the other, not quite 50%, is the titting about that normal people watch Top Gear for.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm not in any way saying that Ben wears grey trousers. I have never seen his trousers. we have a waist up relationship, I think it's fair to say.
It's all above board.
It's like newsreaders.
Ah.
They could be sat there in free underpants for all you know.
Wonderful. Moving on to finance.
terrifying. Thank God we do radio, eh? There was a time when I was threatening to do a video version of this. I may still do that, but yeah. Not until I've moved. I've got a proper studio. Can't look behind me and go, why is there wood glue on the radiator? That's just weird. It's not weird. It's perfectly normal. So, obviously last week, an awful lot of sim racing news, largely about iRacing, but also bits and bobs from GT Revival. Some Le Mans Ultimate bits, and some Forza bits, and some EA WRC bits as well. I thought what we would do was bring you different news from EA WRC, different news from Le Mans Ultimate, and different news from Forza. Because basically what happened was, so the show went out, when did the show go out? This happens every time we do this. So the show went out last Thursday, which was the 7th, and on the 8th, a massive news dump occurred. I don't know why I emphasize the word dump like that, but you know, why not? And various other things came out, which is inevitably the way it is. So unless you're following us on the social channels, how on earth would you know that these things were happening?
Exactly.
Yeah, this is what we're all here for. This is a service we provide. So despite everything that's happening at, I think you said Microsoft Games then. Different MSG, Motorsport Games. So probably going to be the artist formerly known as Motorsport Games by the end of the year. Le Mans Ultimate. So the devs shared some fresh images of Portimao, which, from my opinion, is one of the most underrated circuits out there. I absolutely love Portimao. I think it's a magnificent track with great, just great character, tons of uppy and downy bits, which make it quite hard to get to grips with initially. Loads of blind corners. Yeah, brilliant on a bike, even better. Well, I say brilliant on a car, even better on a bike.
I agree. Portimao is amazing. The best thing that happened with Portimao was that Formula One went there for like two years or something. And I genuinely thought that circuit was going to be a permanent fixture because all the drivers went, I love this place, this is amazing.
Yeah.
All the fans went, this place is amazing.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, this is amazing. Yeah. Formula One went, ah, we'll go to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, let's go where the money. Like, why would we do what the fans want? Let's go where there's money. I mean, he said, what sort of money? But where there's money instead and dusty venues.
It was just like, oh, okay, guess we're doing the normality after the pandemic again. Okay. Because if I remember correctly, the two races they had there were actually proper races as well.
They were quite good, yeah.
There was even things in Formula One called overtakes, which is
unheard of.
Which weren't induced by DRS.
Just nuts. You're mad. Madness, mate.
I know.
Mm.
Who'd have thought?
I know. What I really liked, though, so the Portimao stuff, so they actually had scanned this for RF2 anyway. But it seems what they're doing. So whilst they've shown these shots, and they do look really good, what they've been doing is updating the venue to its most latest status, if you know what I mean. So whatever they would have done for RF2, they've kind of done on stuff on top of it to make it even more accurate, which is really cool. And
yeah,
so they're not just doing it to that, so to try and basically bring it up to WEC standard effectively. So they're not just doing it there, they've as an example, they've also, thank the Lords, they're updating Spa, so it'll have all the new various runoffs and that big ass grandstand. And various changes as well to the track, and you know, obviously the various runoff areas and stuff. I believe they're doing bits to Sebring as well. So for those who might remember the WEC, where they ran in concert with IMSA, something that they've done at COTA as well. Actually, literally watched them switching the pit lane from IMSA to WEC for that, which was quite a cool thing to watch. Their pit lane was on the back straight for the WEC. That will be implemented into Sebring. There's going to be some other visual differences as well. And they're going to be updating Le Mans. So I think where the new Porsche bridge that was introduced literally this year, that's going to get put in, which is pretty good because I'm fairly certain that will be a visual breaking point for the Ford chicane, I suspect.
Yes, that does sound about right for where that
what's
is.
What's really annoying is I don't actually remember many onboards that I watched as they were coming to the end of the lap. So I can't in my head. Like normally, I can kind of get. Because also, you know,
when you said a Porsche bridge, I was a bit like, where was it?
Literally by the Porsche center.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what's this bridge?
Or just back from it. So it might not quite be, but it'd be like just before where the pit entry is, I guess.
Normally you break at the curb where the pit entry is. Normally you break where there's like a massive curb that comes up there, if I remember correctly.
I might be misspeaking, but again, I'd have to watch. But it'll certainly be a big visual marker for, you know, as you're driving around the circuit now. And actually, as a real life spectator, that is a hell of a good thing to have, because that's probably what 500 yards, if not more, away from where the tunnel is that goes under?
Yes. Give or take? The tunnel that's always massively busy under the start-finish line-esque, if you can get round, if you can get round there, because if you're on the particular side, otherwise you have to go all the way to the Dunlop Bridge.
Yeah, which is even just more. I managed to get under that one because it brings you out under what I can't remember what oil brand it is.
Motul.
Yeah, Motul. So that so the tunnel that comes out by the Motul grandstand. I managed to get through, and yes, it was quite busy. So having
it's
that extra bridge
a bit
further
in the world,
back, no, not really, no. So having that extra bridge actually is a really, really good idea. So hopefully it wasn't just for people with certain badges or anything like that, and everyone could use it, because that is actually super handy, particularly if you're coming from like the Porsche curves outside campsites and want to get into the inside of the circuit dead quick without having to walk a bit further up the track to get to a tunnel. So those things are going to be on there as well, which is I think really awesome, because all these, and this is what sort of said about the I can't remember if we wouldn't have said it in the last show, but I know we've discussed it about how I mean, probably we'll come onto this potentially a lot later, but how disappointed I've kind of been with what I've seen with Forza Motorsport at the minute, where they've kind of said, oh yeah, you said that thing, I need to have taken a shot. Where they've rebuilt the circuits from the ground up.
I'll drink for you, don't worry.
A little bit of sick came up then. Because they haven't. Well, insofar as Spa is, as was, definitely. We're pretty sure Laguna Seca is, as was. Yes, we're not entirely sure where the changes are, because they're not actually on the track. Yeah. which is interesting, because Silverstone has been. They've had the new hotel, and the bridge from the hotel to the wing is there. So that got me excited, because I thought, that's pretty cool. It's awesome that they've done that. What's the other thing I saw? The start gantry that was put in at Le Mans, 4 or 5 years ago, I think, the littler one, where the actual grid is, effectively, that was never in the last iteration of Forza, even though I think there was an overlap from when they put it up to when it came out. I don't even think the Porsche Center was in. It might have been. I think they might have updated it and put the Porsche Center in, but yeah, so certain visual update, and these things make a difference, because it does. If you want the full immersion,
it
can be quite jarring if they're not there,
and especially when you want that immersion, or just generally, if you're buying a game which has all the cars in it, then they make a song and dance about the cars, and then all of a sudden you're driving around a circuit which, in theory, doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like, well, I might as well just get a different game on a different platform and mod it. And then I can.
Because this is the thing, if they want it to be a Forza Motorsport, and they're pushing that it's Forza Motorsport, well, therefore they kind of want motorsport people to want to play it.
Exactly.
And the thing about motorsport people is they are some of the most discerning fans that you will find in pretty much any sport, when it comes to products that are relating to their, you know, the thing that they're passionate about, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The comments you see when someone releases a replica car in a certain scale or something, you know, and people look at it and go, well, that's not accurate or whatever. There's enough people whinging about the accuracy of the models of some of the cars that are shown in Forza.
Yeah.
But I think some people just are more into the cars than they are the venues that they're racing on, when it comes to the real ones, you know. And I think it's niche, but it's also damned important if it's what you're really trying to do,
you know. Yeah, I think if you're trying to push, and especially how competitive the sim racing market is as well,
yeah
when quite easily, even though it's a lot more initial input, as in monetary input, to getting like going on to things like iRacing and things like that.
Mm.
But it's one of those things that you're trying to battle as well, where you're trying to get that slice of people's time, not necessarily the money, the time that they're going to influx into this game and not someone else's.
The thing is that the money element is kind of important, because ultimately, yeah, if you've sunk a few hundred quid into iRacing, which when you've bought a good number of tracks and a good number of cars, and you've got a decent workout, more than a few hundred, a decent wheel and pedals to use on it, then you expect a certain level of service from the developer.
Exactly. If you put a small fortune into like things like that, and the same with Forza. Once you get, and if you're into your Forza games, you want to support the Forza games, you won't just buy the basic pack. You'll buy the legendary. Do you know what I mean? Like the limited edition pack.
The platinum or whatever it's called. And the thing is with that is that's not cheap. It's like 90 quid, give or take. And that's quite a lot of money. And therefore, you'd expect a certain level of, again, a certain level of service back. You know,
exactly. Especially when it's built from the ground up. And I'll drink for that.
I'm going to have to punch you one of these days. it is a very pretty game. And having watched a lot of stuff that's been released by influencers over the last couple of days, it certainly sounds a lot better. I'm hearing and reading that wheel use is still a bit numb, and you do have to make quite a few adjustments to kind of make it good. But when you do make those adjustments and you get it good, it is actually very good. But I'd like, you know, you kind of would think that it would be good from the start, and then you make it from good to perfect yourself, which is
I would
how
like,
most games would be.
I would like the fact that if I was buying a racing game that was aimed at, whether this is Le Mans Ultimate, Forza Motorsport, or anything, basically, Assetto Corsa, everything, the fact that it is a motorsport game, or that's the S that you're using it for, they'd have sim races in mind and wheel and pedal users in mind, prioritizing over controller or pad users and things like that. Do you know what I'm trying to?
I do. The fact of the matter is, because of the platform, I don't think you're ever going to get that.
Yeah, that is true.
Which is fine, because I think many people will admit that most people who play Forza will use a pad, and that's absolutely fine. But you can't forget that there will be a number of people who will play this on the PC who will use wheels and pedals and stuff to play the game. They should have just as good an experience as people who use.
I mean, a little bit of a slight tangent on that. I remember playing using the same wheel on, like, I had a Logitech G29 or G920 and used it on Forza and thought, oh, this is all right, you know, casual, this is okay. And then used the same wheel on the because it's compatible for Xbox and PC, and plugged it straight into the PC and everything, and played GTR2 on it. So a game that is about 15 years difference.
Yes.
And I was astounded on the fact that I was actually scared to crash on GTR2 because the force feedback was 10 times more on the same wheel, but on a game that was 15 years older. I was like,
but that's
wow.
also because GTR is a phenomenal title.
Exactly. But it just shows you
when we eventually get Ian Bell on, I shall tell him to his virtual face just how damn good I think GTR is.
I have GTR just chef's kiss. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only game where I've been scared in a GT car at night at Spa, like in the rain, going up Hill Rouge, going, I don't really want to do this, but I'm doing it.
So, there's a lot, there is, despite what we're saying, there is a lot to like about Forza Motorsport. I think there does seem to be, you know, quite a lot of good stuff involved. I think one of the most disappointing things so far is this Builders' Cup thing. And I haven't found one person that's been positive about it, whereby in order to be able to basically tune your car how you always used to, you have to race in it and then unlock all the bits to, you know, literally unlock it through leveling
up. Oh, no.
And from what I heard now, unless I misheard Super GT's video that I watched this morning, he basically said that, so if I was doing that in a FK8 Civic Type R, for instance, and I level up and unlock everything, even though I only wanted to change the tyres or change the suspension, because that's all I needed to do, I've got to level up everything until I can unlock that to do that. It's only for that specific car. It's not for for that group of cars, and it's not for more versions of that car. So if I buy another FK8 Civic Type R, which you might do, and people do when they do bigger racing series and stuff like that, they'll have multiples of the same car, so they could literally
absolutely
just pick different versions of it depending on the particular series they're entering. You've got to do that process every time. That's broken.
That's horrendous. So what you're saying is if I went and did, say, I wanted to race with my friends or a championship online on Forza. Yeah, I know, it's a novel idea. it is a novel idea.
Sorry.
But say the series is a month away, the opening race, and they've brought out the cars list of, say, 20 hot hatches that they want. And you want to know which one, you've got a choice of three or four that you think, oh, I want the Clio, I want the Civic, I want the this, I want the that. And you want to test it to a specific build that they've brought out to meet to, say, I don't know, the old Forza's A-Class, A600 or something.
Yeah.
You have to rank up your car, every single one of them, so hard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Forza, sort it out, mate. So because that's horrendous.
The thing is, I would understand that as, and the thing is, I can't imagine people actually doing it. But if that was a way of doing it, almost like a career mode type thing, and that was for that, but there was also this basically open play mode where you just do it how you've always done it in every other iteration of Forza.
Yeah,
that would be fine, because then that gives you the choice. Because if you wanna go through the grind and do careery things and stuff like that and do that, then great. But if you literally just want to get online with your mates or in an organized community and take part in online racing pretty much from day one, there should be an open play version of it where you can literally just buy the car, do all the tuning that you need to do, get the build done, get the liveries on, sorted. And get entered into those online races. Otherwise, the first couple of weeks of online racing is going to be very dull.
Yeah. Especially when, like, back in the, like, Tourer days, like, with your Aston Martins and stuff, I had four of them.
Yeah.
In all different liveries with the same...
Well no, because if you think, as an example, we had the Aston, so this was the GT3 Vantage for those who are paying attention still. We had a version of it built for the Tourer GT series, and we had a different version of it with a slightly different livery built for the Le Mans series.
Yeah.
And endurance stuff.
Exactly.
So you had that, man. I think I maybe had, yeah, I probably had about four or five different versions, because I had I had like a high downforce version, a low downforce version.
Yeah, exactly.
For each circuit, and then like a, and then like a, what I used to call my wild card one, which was just like a different one. And if I was feeling particularly brazen, I'd run that. But yeah, it's
that would be
a
that's
lot of,
horrendous.
Yeah. So at the moment, it's quite a lot of work to do that, which is not ideal. Not ideal. Moving slightly on, in awesome news, because this was something we got very excited, possibly unnecessarily excited about. The Crew Motorfest is now out today. Woohoo. And Ubisoft has already highlighted what we can expect from, air quotes, season one, in terms of extra content moving forward. 6 new vehicles, including a Ford GT. It's not really a Ford GT racer. It's kind of... What's it called? It's not the GT... Is it the GT40 Mark IV or something like that? This like brand new one that they've literally just brought out with the Mustang GT3. Was it the Mark V?
It is along those marks, yeah.
Yeah. It looks more like that. It's not the pure EcoBoost GTLM that we're used to, but hey ho, it's Motorfest. I'm not really gonna tie them down to details. Ford Mustang Shelby is in there as well. And a Pagani Huayra. But only if you do certain challenges and then you'll get that. It's kind of a Horizon-y thing to do, which is fine. September, basically the content in September is going to basically look mostly American stuff. The graphic they've put out shows, I've got to squint to look at this, Muscles Power, American Pop Culture.
Oh.
I want to say American Dust, so I'm guessing some sort of off-roady type things. And then the last one is American Racing, so basically each bit of September they're going to do a little bit. And then in October, they're going to Japan. They're going to Japanese Big Four, Custom, Torge.
Oh, we all love that.
And Original. Original
Gangster.
Something I can't read. Excellent Offspring reference there. Well done.
There's only a certain amount of people that would know that.
Yeah.
I'd squeeze that.
It's the Japanese Big Four, Custom, Torge, and Original Rice Paddy. I feel a little uncomfortable having said that, but yeah. And then November, it is. Qualitat with an umlaut on it, so I'm going to assume German cars. Velocita, I'm going to assume Italian cars. Now, Elegance or Elegance, so it could be
French?
No, it has to be British, isn't it? Luxury. So that's stuff around Leeds and Manchester, cars from around there. Friends of Monty Python just went, aha, I get that reference. And one that's called, and then Final Battle, which hopefully isn't France, and hopefully means we're not getting like some sort of tank or other World War paraphernalia. It suddenly turned into Battlefield. the new vehicles that they'll be adding is the Ford GT, the Mon race car, Honda S2000 Ultimate Edition, Kamiya Hadar Edition, Jaguar F-Type SVR, which is one of my favourite versions of the S-Type, Mitsubishi Evo 10 Red Fury Edition, the Pagani Huayra Rubicon Edition, and a buggy type thing, which is called the Ivory Tower SSV. I can't even with those names. but that's quite cool. So, I know I said I was going to get this when it came out. I will sadly not be doing that. I'm pretty sure they said that there's going to be a free period to play it, which, if that is still happening, get on Steam, get on your Xboxes and whatever platform you're using and give it a go, because this really does look like a very cool game. I am quite excited about it, if I'm honest.
I'll give it a go. I think I'm gonna give it a, because this is the one with the massive cars list, isn't it?
Massive cars list and boats and planes.
Oh yes, you can have a Spitfire. You can fly a Spitfire.
P45 Mustang. P45, P40, whatever it is, P40 Mustang. Not P45, that's something very different. awesome way to have it delivered, though. I've actually seen, there is a screen, I've seen a screenshot of the boats now. They look just, yeah, lovely. It is expensive. If you want the ultimate edition, it's, well, there's no other way of putting it. It's 88, it's over 80 quid.
Oof.
But that is fine. Yeah, so there's probably people out there that are playing it already who've got early access, but there you go. Speaking of games that are coming up, EA Sports WRC, it's in the game. Again, just after the show, announced a few extra cars. So I'm just going to quickly run through what the car list that we currently know is. So WRC, obviously we have all three current WRCs, so the Ford Puma, the Hyundai i20N, Toyota GR Yaris, all hybrid. WRC2, we have the Citroen C3, Ford Fiesta, Hyundai i20N, Skoda Fabia Rally 2, Skoda Fabia RS Rally 2, and the Volkswagen Polo GTI R5. We have the Ford Fiesta Rally 3 from Junior WRC. We have another, weirdly, another Ford Fiesta Rally 3 that's in Rally 3.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. We have Ford Fiesta Rally 4. Did you know there was a Rally 4? I didn't know there was a Rally 4. There's a Rally 4. Couple of historics that have also appeared is the 2003 Citroen Zara, the 2011 Mini Countryman, and the McRae R4, which hasn't been seen, I don't think, since a pretty early, either a very early Dirt, I think it might even be Dirt 1, which is cool. The Impreza, the 98 Subaru Impreza has also been seen as well, so that's should appear, fingers crossed, hopefully. I think one of the other highlights from this is that they're moving to the Unreal Engine away from their Ego Engine, so hopefully graphically we're going to be in for a jump in fidelity and whatnot. It's also meant that they can have much bigger stages, with a total of over 600 kilometers, which will obviously focus on the 2023 season. Which is, yeah, really cool. So, remaining quietly confident about this, because Dirt 2.0 was one of my favourite rally games, next to Richard Burns Rally.
Nothing beats Richard Burns, is it? Nothing.
No, not really. So I'm really sort of hoping that this will give us the proper next-gen experience that was just slightly missing from the WRC, the recent WRC games from KT. So, yeah, fingers crossed there.
Sorry to interject. Can you get on this EA WRC? It's weird not seeing Codemasters or what it used to be for WRC games.
Yeah, I mean, they're still the dev, weird. But so, yeah.
Can you get the, like, old, really old historic rally cars? So, I say really old, but things like,
I know what you mean.
Ford Escorts and things like that. And because if you can, then I really want this game. Because there's nothing more satisfying than going sideways in a forest in a Ford Escort.
Okay, so they're saying there's going to be 68 historic vehicles in there.
I will say there will be then.
initially. We don't know what they all are yet, but initially.
But Group B rally cars will be very cool as well.
Oh, they just will be, won't they? So they just will be. And then just very quickly at the end, because NASCAR, to celebrate its 75th anniversary, is doing what in sim racing, do you think?
They're gonna have Le Mans in their game.
No.
Oh.
Incorrect. No, what they're actually doing is they're going to Rocket League.
Isn't that normally how NASCARs crash?
Well,
when you see the like massive pileups, it's like when you score in Rocket League.
I mean, I'm too young to know what Rocket League. I know what Rocket League is, but I'm too young to appreciate it. Yes, so they're adding. They're doing a NASCAR 75th anniversary bundle, which has all the cars in it for Rocket League.
I'm slightly disappointed.
I'm just shaking my head in like a, yeah, whatever. Whatever. Never mind making a decent game with a decent developer who can actually do your series, you know, the service it requires for the fans. No. Just go onto a game where you're basically hedgering a football with a car. Mm-mm.
I'm sure there is lots of skill in Rocket League. I mean, I have seen quite a few videos of Rocket League, and it does look a lot of fun. But
that's because you're young.
Okay, fair enough. to be fair, when I was in uni, we did have a part of one of the evenings we had. We did have Rocket League and added drinking rules to Rocket League. That was quite fun.
Never drink and drive, people. Never drink and
drive. Yeah, don't do that. But Rocket League, every time you score, everyone else has to drink. That's quite fun. But yeah. So, it's the only time I've ever played Rocket League.
If I roll my eyes anymore, they will actually come out of my head. anyway, and on that terrible disappointment, it's time to end the show. Dear, oh dear. I've been Matt Hunter. Steve has just let the side down. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'm off to beat him with his own flat cap now. See you later, everyone. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast, wherever you get your podcasts.